The numbers told the story, they always do.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, iHeart Radio, YouTube TV. It's all proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. Gil Alexander, Jeff Parlay is here as well. Jeffrey, good morning to you, sir. You good? Summer League yesterday for you? Hobnobbing at the win?
No. Yesterday was a nice take it easy day.
Nice take it easy day. Hobnobbing at the win is hard work.
Also, I will say, Gil, improving my theory, at least for one day, it's not as easy to beat baseball teams when they don't play like the 0-3 Tigers.
Yes. About baseball. We'll get to that momentarily. It is a big golf day on the show today. The Open Championship, of course. Well, not quite even 48 hours away, closer to 36 hours away. Dave Tindall will join us from across the pond, giving us his trends piece that he does for each and every one of golf's majors, winnows it down on about 10 different categories, who he believes fits the bill from past champions that hits most of those categories that he believes would be the guy to beat this week at the Open Championship. We'll get to that. Reed Fowler from DraftKings. He's their NFL and PGA analyst. We'll talk Open Championship with him. Drew Dinsick momentarily to talk Open Championship, also tennis and football. Mark Borchard on baseball. And since you bring up baseball, Jeff, let me just say also we'll have to give pentathlon picks today. Although today's a day where there's two picks required, favorite and underdog. I think I will have the favorite that I will play on the show today. I'm not sure about the underdog yet. I haven't really decided on that, so I'm not sure that will happen in the next 2 hours, but certainly the favorite I'll give. And last night, let me just say a quick reminder about betting the sport of baseball, which I cut my teeth on for so many summers, did nothing else but immerse myself in betting baseball. A quick reminder, Jeff, a quick reminder about how torturous betting the sport of baseball is. You have no business losing, then you have no business winning. And then in the end, regardless of outcome, you're like, can I get those 4 hours back? That was pretty, I don't know what I got out of that. And by the way, that's from a guy who actually somehow we won. I have no idea how we won. It's ridiculous. Anyway, our next pick coming up later on the show. Drew Dinsick joins us from NBC Sports, Bet the Edge podcast, and of course also the Deep Dive podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. Drew, good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Up in the Eastern Sierras, enjoying the high altitude and trying to unplug a little bit after that women's Wimbledon final on Saturday. I needed to go for a long walk.
Oh, goodness! For those who don't know, Drew famously had Ann Jabeur at 33-1. In fact, I remember where I was. I was walking on. I was either in Santa Monica or Venice. Can't remember exactly where I was right there, but you texted me. This was like a random Saturday months ago. And not months ago, but like 2-3 months ago. And you were like, hey, Ann Jabeur, 33-1. What's that all about? She gets all the way to the final. She wins the first set. And you must be thinking, oh, boy, here we go. And then Rybakina, how Chris Fowler pronounced her name correctly. I had not been doing so. Did to her what she did to Simona Halep, although she Jedi mind tricked Halep with, I think Halep like had 9 double faults, and she just rolls. And by the way, the enthusiasm, once she won her first slam, the enthusiasm, as I said to somebody on Twitter, of me mid-jog, like it just didn't even seem to affect her. I'm so sorry your future went down that way, man.
It was a fun ride. Ann Jabeur is still, I'm still a fan, just in terms of the type of tennis she produced and how enjoyable it is to watch on grass. She's truly kind of a unicorn in terms of having like a grass specialty, which we don't see a ton on tour these days. So I'll go back to the well next year. And, you know, I guess presumably you got to shop for prices during clay season because people remember that she's good on grass once we get to grass, I guess. So
that's really how it works. Yes.
I mean, really and truly. So, you know, hopefully we get a similar type of opportunities next year. I don't think this was her only shot. People were kind of commenting in the moment like, oh, so sad for her. Like, this was her one chance. And I kind of hard disagree. Like, she seems to be improving, you know, at least, you know, career arc wise, like her peak ELO right now is right now. And so like the idea that she's never going to find this level again, particularly with the state of women's tennis and grass in particular, like there's not, you know, unless Iga all of a sudden decides she wants to be good on grass,
right?
I think Ons will still have a lot of opportunity.
Have you really heard people say that about Ons? But I know people say that about Kyrgios, and I quite agree that that's a reasonable
take. I'm 100% there with that. 100% there on Kyrgios.
Yeah.
No, I have heard a lot. I mean, I thought a lot of the instant reaction, there were people who were like, you know, I'm not going to believe it until I see it, that she can get across the finish line just because of the mental stuff. And, you know, I really didn't agree with most of the takes in the immediate aftermath. To me, it felt like Rybakina the match was on her racket from the second set on. Every time she was facing any kind of distress, on break chances, she produced a level of tennis that was the best we saw from the whole tournament, I thought. And her serve and her timing was devastating for the entire second week of Wimbledon.
She was impeccable.
Jabeur had, she deploys just a magnificent drop shot, and Rybakina covered it well. And there was a stretch of like 8 or 9 games between the second and third set where Jabeur just could not produce a winner, even though she was playing the same level of tennis we saw from her the whole time. So, it was a tough way to go out, but it was a fun run. And you find a price like 33-1
sure.
that you know in your heart is dead wrong, and you have to shoot for those.
Absolutely, you do it time and time again. Futures are hard to hit, man. They are hard to hit, even when you have a good bet, right? Like the confluence of events that has to take place for you to hit one of them, let alone multiple ones. I mean, it's incredible. And if you've done this long enough, you certainly recognize that. That said, now one more major, the U.S. Open, as we go to hard courts, mercifully, I should say, after my Wimbledon. And so, with grass, I had the one ego future at 9-1, but, said again on grass, this is not her surface. That's the only one I'm going to have. I do have a U.S. Open ticket on Iga at 7-1, which I love a lot more than I do the Wimbledon one, which again, same night, the night Ash Barty retired is when I got that one as well. Nothing on the men's side, because we don't know about Novak, right? So there's no, and I guess we don't know about Rafa either. So no real point in doing anything there yet, right? Unless you have a number you like.
Well, I would expect that you're going to see Alcaraz come in. So I think if you want to, if you've been enjoying the tennis he's produced this year, the best that we saw from him, in my opinion at least, was the 4 week stretch between Indian Wells and Miami. Of course, he was the Miami champion. He's obviously very comfortable on that speed hard court, which is essentially what you're going to get at Flushing Meadows. So realistically, I think Alcaraz ought to be a close second shot after Medvedev here, assuming that Djokovic elects not to get vaccinated and show up, assuming that Rafa Nadal is still in the physical state that he's been in now for a couple of weeks. I would expect that this is kind of an opportunity on the men's side to feast, for some of the younger players to really try to flex and take home hardware. Not unlike what we saw with Medvedev last year, winning his first slam, not unlike what we saw the year team won. And takes home his first slam. Like this, the U.S. Open on the men's side now, because of the way the schedule breaks and because of the grind of the summer on the likes of the Djokovic's and the Nadals, who are older players, I think realistically the expectation for men's U.S. Open futures, you should be looking for the younger guys who can really emerge on this surface and try to make a name for themselves. Alcaraz and Medvedev probably ought to be your 1A, 1B. Shots at this point. And I think as Alcaraz wins some of these run-up tournaments, he ought to be strong consideration for Rogers Cup. He ought to be strong consideration for Cincinnati. While Cincinnati's a little bit faster and plays a little bit more into the strengths of a Medvedev, I still think the U.S. Open with the slower hard court is kind of right in that sweet spot. And on the women's side, the Iga number you got is absolutely absurd. I'm never going to see that or anything close to it again.
Yep.
I think realistically, on any hard court surface, particularly a slow hard court or clay, Iga ought to come into the into that tournament as the presumptive heavy favorite. I don't, and honestly, the rest of this list, of players near at or near the top. I just can't get anywhere close to those numbers. Thinking Osaka is all of a sudden going to switch and flip a switch. Thinking Sabalenka can come off of a layoff and produce the level of tennis she needs to win a slam. I'm just not there. So it's either Iga walks to a U.S. Open final here, not unlike what we saw at the French Open, or there's some complete surprise up and coming newcomer, or a Rybakina type of run out of someone who just produces unbelievable quality for 2 weeks, because this is not a very strong field, frankly.
Svatek now plus 175, courtesy of BetMGM. We only have a minute and a half here before the break, and I want to get your Open Championship golf thoughts and football after the break. But we started briefly with baseball, and I've never asked you this question. And so just in 60 seconds or less, if you could, why do you not bet baseball? Is it not a sport that you grew up liking? Is it not a sport that you that your brain likes handicapping? Why have you completely avoided that sport?
Frankly, the handful of times that I've thought hard about it and dug into what it would take to create a number that can actually compete in this market, the opportunity cost is too great. I have enough infrastructure already in the likes of tennis and the other sports that I can kind of handicap for fun in the summer, that it just isn't something that I can ever expect to realistically win at. So, the folks who are making the market have such a phenomenal head start in terms of what you need to be able to produce and how you need to be able to use the StatCast data and the advanced analytics that exist for baseball nowadays, that I just feel like it would take me way, way, way too much to get to that point. So for me, it's fun just to watch other people try to beat it.
It's fun, in quotes. Listen, I remember my dad saying about crossword puzzles. He's like, crossword puzzles, they help you with English, right? In the end, you get better at English. He's like, Sudokus, he's like, they don't really make you better at math. It's just kind of a waste of time, he used to say. And that's how I compare other sports and betting baseball in the end. Anyway, that's my thought. More with Drew on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada, whatever your sport, whatever your betting style. You're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is, always appreciate the feedback. This is from, Hockey Skeptic, talking about our interview with Las Vegas Chris yesterday. Thanks for covering the epidemic of people wasting time with banter and personal updates on podcasts. Huge miscalculation by such hosts in thinking that we actually care about such things. Chris was talking about how podcasts waste time at the top, sports betting ones. Phil Weiss, 3 weeks to Soccer Gill. Time to get your man Paul Carr on to throw some futures at us. Man, how time flies. We'll get Paul Carr on. And Mike Ross, listening to your pod about the Jabeur beat. Oh, talk about our Wimbledon preview that we did with Dan Weston and Drew Dinsick. He said he placed a win place bet on... he does this with his golf bets as well, but his main book, it was Bet Rivers, and he had Kyrgios 20-1 pre-tourney and then cashed with him finishing in second at 10-1. So congratulations to you, Mike Ross, playing a little win place bet on Nick Kyrgios. How about that?
That's actually a nice offering that I haven't heard that offered very often, actually.
You play that ever, Drew?
That's pretty popular in Europe, the each way bets, where, you split the stake depending on the number of players places. And, that's becoming, even broader offering here in for golf futures outright. So you can get each way, results out to like 8 to 10 places.
Yeah. Dave Tindall will be on later. Dave Tindall will be on later. He'll say each way at least twice, I'm sure, during the segment.
Over.
Going over on that. Most of our audience will be like, what is he saying each way? And he says it with an accent, so it's super cool. All right,
Think about the difference if you were betting Zalatoris each way at every tournament this season, goodness, as opposed to betting him to win. Like, you would be, you, the guy that only bet him to win, is living in a ditch, and the guy that bet him each way every
right.
tournament is, he's dining on the town.
I just have an image of a dude living in a ditch. So I still do with primetime action. We're playing out our one and done season. And so, by the way, Matt and I both had Schauffele from last week, so we've taken a lead on Kelly. Matt's in first, I'm in second, and Kelly's in third. It only matters if you're last. It's a dinner thing. I think I am one and dunning with Zalatoris here. I have him left. Just seems like a pretty safe kind of play in terms of getting him up high on the leaderboard, at least based on exactly what you're talking about, that he has been flirting with it, but not yet to the promised land. You haven't made any bets yet. Are you doing a Calcutta? What are you doing here?
Yeah, probably going to get involved in the Calcutta. It would be tomorrow, but I haven't really done a good job of putting together numbers, even though I love the Open. This is a perfect transition from Wimbledon to to a golf major that happens in the morning, so you can kind of get up, enjoy some early morning sports here on the West Coast, and then get on with your day. I'll be very tuned into the Open, and of course the fact that it's at St. Andrews makes it that much better. Anyone that has any kind of history with watching golf majors has a close relationship with this course because of what we've seen, particularly in the 2000s with the Tiger runs. So it's going to be a great tournament. It is an absolutely loaded field. I really do not think – I don't have anyone with greater than 5% chance to win this tournament right here. So I think in general the board looks top-heavy to me. I think I'm not going to be on the Rory train. There is way, way, way too much confidence in the market that Rory's going to be outstanding here. And in general, I don't think the distance between him and some of these other contenders is as great as the numbers would suggest. I may end up backing some of the bigger names that have drifted a little bit here just on basis of recent form, because this is at least the way that this course looks to be playing. This is going to require some absolutely elite shot making. So I would be surprised if we see a long shot come in. But at the same time, I think that there is not a lot separating the sort of the top 20.
Can you explain? I shouldn't assume. You know what they say about assuming, Drew. Makes you regret what you said earlier. Could you explain to people what a Calcutta in golf is?
Oh, yeah, sure. So in general, it's an auction, not unlike you would have for, for basically any sports event where you want to have, you want to bet into a book of golfers and have a shot at a number of different ways to cash. It's a two part exercise. Number one, coming up with the correct win probabilities for all golfers in the field. And then number two, kind of evaluating the players that you're in the auction with and trying to come up with a strategy to capture the golfers that you have value on relative to price through a bidding process. And it's absolutely as fun as it gets. The most common example is the NCAA tournament Calcuttas. Basically you get a payout for every round that your team advances. In a golf Calcutta, it's basically like a tiered payout for, the top 12 finishers and then a bunch of junk pots. So guy gets a hole in one, you get a pay, you get a percentage of the pot. Guy gets, the worst score on a hole of the entire tournament, you get a portion of the pot. So there's a lot of fun ways to set it up. And, if you're going to get skin in the game for a tournament that is this elite in terms of competition, then that's a great way to do it. Cause basically if 1 through 12 get a payday, then that's just about the same as getting an each way payout to 12. So it's a nice way to kind of, take on a tournament and have a little bit less risk and still have a chance at scoring a payday.
Would you like to call out some of our mutual friends? Who's the easiest player to read in a Calcutta and who's the most difficult to predict their actions?
Oh my gosh. Everybody comes with a different strategy every time. So I don't actually think that at least of the Bet the Process one that Rufus and Jeff put on.
Yeah.
Those guys are unpredictable. There's a couple Aussies that play that always go high on the Aussies. That's the only thing that you can count on.
All right. So no particular thought here, but nobody with more than 5% per your numbers. Chance.
No, in fact, this is the first tournament in a while where it's been this flat, I think.
Okay. Football, obviously the Baker Mayfield trade, the latest sort of big headline. as I said on Monday, I believe it was Monday, I don't even remember, no, it was last week already, the collective market reaction was kind of a big meh, whatever, you know, incremental moves. Did it induce any moves for you? Have you made any other NFL bets?
That didn't really change my perspective much, although surely there's a little bit too much meh out there. This is a big upgrade, I think. I mean, not a big enough upgrade where you would expect Carolina and all of a sudden is competing for a playoff spot, but it certainly moved the needle from them from very unlikely to at least there's now a window. I personally don't, I don't see lots of things to get excited about with the Panthers for this season, but if you get anywhere close to the ceiling we've seen from Baker in his time in the NFL, as opposed to what you had last year, and there's a non-zero chance that happens because of the injury he sustained last year, and just in general because of the pressure he was under. He's a guy that does seem to play better when the pressure's off, and this is no better scenario than he possibly could have hoped for. He's in a weaker conference now. He's in one of the weakest divisions in football. He's going to have, he has a supporting cast around him that's decent. His protection's not going to be as good. And that's really where Baker struggled last year, was when the going got tough and he was under duress, he was pretty miserable. So if the offensive line doesn't really hold up in Carolina, then he's in a little bit of a tough spot. But overall, I still think the key macro environment that you're looking at with the NFL doesn't really make me want to get much involved in the futures market at this point. I think we in general are kind of moving into an era in the NFL where there's less importance on regular season winning for the teams that realistically can win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. There's just less of a premium on getting that rest at the end of this season. And, if you can secure your playoff spot and you can give your guys rest in weeks 17, 18, and if you can get your team playing well at the end of the season and healthy into the playoff mix, and you're the likes of the Chiefs or the Bills, then you'll take that. And so I think realistically betting into the teams that have a decent chance to win the Super Bowl preseason is not going to be a great strategy this year. But waiting to find some time during the season where you're buying low on those teams does make sense, because ultimately, to come out of the AFC, you're going to be able to need to score 30 points in a playoff game. And there's a lot of offenses that are going to be in the mix that aren't going to be able to do that. And so I think realistically, you're still looking for best price available during the season on the Bills, on the Chiefs. And then in the NFC side, if there's going to be surprise, it's probably going to come over there just because of overall the weakness of the NFC relative to the AFC. But I think in general, the market is too high on the Bucks. I think the market's gotten way, way, way too bullish about the Philadelphia Eagles at this point. So there should be some opportunity to find some teams that are expected to come in that middle class that surprise and get decent playoff seeding.
Agree with you. Said it all last year when they added a 17th game. It's not like they added 6.25% to the season. It felt like from a betting standpoint, load management and stuff, that it was far greater of an impact on how teams would handle it. Drew, always appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, best of luck. Enjoy your vacation.
Enjoy the outdoors. Thank you, sir. Coming back with our betting pentathlon next.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN will be broadcasting live from NBA Summer League now through July 17th. We have been, of course, with The Edge, Jonathan Von Tobel, Matt Eumanns, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, live from NBA Summer League every weekday. We'll also have special guests, exclusive content, and live updates all throughout VSiN shows. For more, follow us at VSiN Live on Twitter and at VSiN Live on YouTube. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. I didn't end up going to Summer League yesterday because caught wind, of course, that Banchero was being shut down after two stellar, and I do mean stellar performances at Summer League. And one of which I saw the tail end of last Thursday when I was there down at Thomas & Mack. And so the Holmgren Banchero mano a mano never happened, so I didn't go yesterday. I think I will go to the Warriors tonight, though. Everybody's playing.
Kuminga, James Wiseman looked really good the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll check that out. A show. Okay, so the betting pentathlon began yesterday, the VSiN MLB betting pentathlon. You have a so six got it, so it was totals yesterday. We just had one bet yesterday, to hit a total, and we had six that hit it and five that didn't. What are you looking at the top here?
Looks like actually we got seven that technically won yesterday.
Okay, seven. Nice.
The top five standings, which you can see the fancy graphic at VSiN Live on the tweets. Right now, Gil, this show is in a tie for second with The Edge. So humans and JVT are tied with us because we took a traditional flat juice -110 bet. Right now, odds on, Amal Shah, Mike Palm had a -105 bet. So they're technically in the lead thanks to the better juice. Based off the system that we're using, and then the look ahead with Scott Seidenberg just behind us, and then in tie for fifth, Betting Across America, primetime action, and individual entrant Wes Reynolds.
Oh,
all won yesterday.
Wes Reynolds, individual entrant. I like that. Listen, and I'm going to say it again, as I said at the top of the show. I have bet literally thousands of baseball games in my life. There were summers on end again that I was immersed in this. Baseball betting, this was a quick reminder last night. And again, I started by saying, I had no idea how we won last night. No clue. All I know it was baseball betting in encapsulated in one game. Because we had the under in the Giants Diamondbacks game. It ends up 4-3, goes under the total. I have no idea. First of all, there was a whole huge portion of that game. We had no business losing, not even close. Then, of course, what happens, the D-backs have an inning where they get a walk. A walk to start the inning, then a swinging bunt, basically single, right? I think it was Ruff. And so then it's first and second, right? Full swing, it just trickles in the infield perfectly. And then a ball that bounces off the bag at third base. And you're just like, oh, this is how we're gonna lose this. And then somehow we win. We had no business winning this. Somehow we win. Baseball happened. So I'm quickly reminded, and again, I used my dad's analogy before, it really does come down in the end with baseball. I don't have this with other sports. I'm curious how you feel, Jeff, that at least when you're betting football, we all love football so much, tennis, you see the athleticism, the mental fortitude, basketball. With baseball, sometimes at the end of these games, you're like, well, what did I get out of that? Even with a win, you're like, did I deserve or not deserve? I'm not sure. So many moving parts. By the way, the Giants' defense, oh, good God. No arms in the outfield either. I feel like that. Will Hill and I were texting during this game. I feel like it's becoming an epidemic more than just there. It's like the sport is sort of regressing defensively. Do you get that sense from it?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think there are some teams where it is very, very evident that the defense is just an abomination. The Giants' defense.
Brutal.
The Giants defense went from one of the better defenses in baseball last year to barely above double A in the way of their defense.
How'd they win 107 last year? Isn't that amazing looking back on it?
Again, it's one of the more flabbergasting single season results in baseball history that team won that.
Late night Lamont was the symbol of that. Like how this guy came out of oblivion. Farhan Zahidi plucks him out of oblivion. And he has that kind of season. And then this year, you know, back to normal. I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Incredible all the way around.
So today we have to pick a favorite and an underdog. I don't have the underdog quite yet. I don't think we have all the lines, if I'm not mistaken. We're waiting for one at least.
Yeah, everything's on the board now. We still don't have a line on Phillies and Blue Jays at some books. And that I'm pretty sure is because we're not certain who's actually playing for the Philadelphia Phillies because of the
Canadian rules.
The Canadian rules. We know JT Realmuto will not be there. That we do know. And we know Kyle Gibson pitched on Saturday because he's not vaccinated. So we know that, Gil.
Okay. I do have the favorite pick. I will call my shot on the favorite today. Again, we have to pick a favorite and an underdog today after the total yesterday. Tomorrow, I believe, is a run line and the last day is a prop. So today's the big day, right? Because we have two bets today. The MLB betting pentathlon here at VSiN. Good luck to all. I'm going with the we're allowed to do five innings too. That was clarified as well. We're allowed to do five innings. I'm taking the Minnesota Twins first five. -144 was the number at FanDuel. So Minnesota Twins and Josh Winder -144. Not really a backing of him. He's been, you know, okay. Well, first of all, his ERA better than his advanced stats. So you don't typically like to back someone who, you know, his ERA is 3.12, but his FIP is almost a full run worse than that. This is really, though, a fade of Seinfeld's Jason Alexander for the Milwaukee Brewers. Was he in Seinfeld? Same guy? Jason Alexander, Jeff, a 4.75 ERA, but a FIP north of, an XFIP north of 5. He has definitely gotten the worst of it when it comes to BABIP. But here's the real key numbers with Jason Alexander. You know where I'm going. 10.2% K rate, 9% walk rate. Whenever you get into the flirtatious, your walk rate might actually be higher than your K rate. We're not quite there yet with Jason Alexander. But whenever you get into that area, oh boy. In Minnesota, like Milwaukee, by the way, Minnesota even better, weighted on base as a team collectively against right-handers. I'll play the first five. I'll fade a dude with a 10.2% K rate in Jason Alexander. And by the way, the other part about this is, and I've touched on this when sort of doing deep dives on baseball in the past, one of the more historically, not that this has affected the Brewers in their interleague games away thus far this year, but one of the more historically underrated things in terms of what's immersed in betting lines and what is not, the American League advantage at home in interleague games, in my opinion, is not properly put in to your daily betting lines, your leaning.
Does that matter now with it being a universal DH?
Yes, because I don't believe, although they have roster constructed it a little more towards there, I don't think we've gotten to full ninth place equivalence. So that's always a fun thing to sort of have in your bag as well with these bets. So the Twins first five will be my favorite bet of the day. Lock that in, -144. Again, as far as the underdog, I don't know. You wanted to ask me about something?
Yeah, so we know half the home run derby field now, Gil.
Ah, I okay. knew you were Jeff said, I got something to ask you about. When you're gone, I'm like, I think I know what this is.
So we know half the field. We know at least the National League entrance, where Pete Alonso's going to go for his third straight. Ronald Acuna Jr. is there. Juan Soto's there. We kind of forgot about Juan Soto this year because of how bad Washington is, Gil. And Albert Pujols is in this thing.
Oh, my God. What are we doing?
Sure. Let Albert go in there and hit a few home runs and get eliminated in the first round.
684 home runs, and then he'll throw out his back during the Derby.
So here's a question for you. How short is too short on the back-to-back champion with Alonso when these numbers come out?
That's the proper question. Because I do think that I feel like, with apologies to Soto and everybody else who's awesome, Acuna, right? But I feel like Pete Alonso wants to make this his thing. And back-to-back-to-back would be pretty cool. So how short is too short? I don't know. What do you think? Do you see lines now?
I haven't seen anything because the whole field isn't out there. Yeah. I was just trying to figure out what the number is even going to be because I have a feeling that people will just run to the counter and bet it regardless of how short it is. But isn't like plus 250 way too short in an event like this? That's that random?
Plus 250?
Yeah.
I'd play plus 250.
I think that's a play at that number.
I'd play plus 250.
But it's just a matter of... Because going through this, Alonso was 8-1 when he won in 2019. I think last year I got him at plus 460 was the number I got him at late in the game, so I got a bad number. I think anything, as long as you get more than $2, I think that's still got to be a play, right?
Jason Weingarten was on with Scott Seidenberg last night, and they were talking about this briefly. I was tipped off at Jason's appearance there. And by the way, Jason is like on 2X on that show compared to this one. Man, is he alert at night. Not so much under a cloud of smoke. He said, I think the thing about this, don't overthink it. Like some events, you don't have to overthink. Alonso in the Derby, don't get cute. I think that's the best advice anybody can give on that. Reed Fowler on the Open Championship next. Numbers Game Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The action never stops, and I mean never. at BetMGM. Sign up now using bonus code VSIN1000 and your first wager is risk-free up to $1,000. BetMGM's state-of-the-art app offers a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, daily boosted odds specials, and much more. No matter what your favorite sport is, you'll find out why nothing beats a win at the King of Sportsbooks. Simply download the BetMGM app today, that is, or go to BetMGM.com and enter bonus code VSIN1000 to make your first wager risk-free up to $1,000. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offers not available in Nevada or New York. Gil Alexander, Jeff Parlay. After the show today, we're doing the podcast version of the Q2 MLB derivative show. Mark Borchardt and I. So heading down to the D after this to do that show. Mark Borchardt will be joining us on this show in just a bit. But first, ladies and gentlemen, he is both an NFL and PGA analyst for DraftKings. Love having him on the show. It's Reed Fowler. How you doing, Reed?
Gil, I'm doing great. Like we were talking about last night, I'm excited for this Open, but it's a little, you know, I guess I'm foreboding. It's a little bittersweet that we're potentially going to get the runner-up here.
So there it is. There is your disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen. We're about to get the runner-up. Now, the reason that Reed says this is because, well, it's happened more than once. But 2 weeks ago, correct me if I'm wrong, this was a Travelers, was it?
Yeah, so what was that? Maybe three, actually.
3 weeks
this
ago.
Point. Yeah. Feels like yesterday.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure for you it does. So you had Thigala. You had Sahith Thigala pre-flop at 150-1, was it?
Yes, pre-flop at 150. I was talking to a couple of my friends. I was talking to Jason Sobel on Thursday, Friday, when they saw Xander Schauffele go out and just absolutely torch right the course along with Patrick Cantlay. And he was saying, good luck on your Sahith Thigala ticket. But you know what? I held strong. Yeah. I followed Thigala on Friday. He looked solid. And he just kind of kept on hanging around. And yeah, on Sunday, as I was driving back, my wife and I were driving back from Connecticut to Boston, and she was narrating the last four or five holes. And trust me when I say it was, I had to keep two hands on the wheel, keep on looking straight, because when she told me he actually missed the ball on his second shot on Sunday, on 18, I was about to pull over. I was sick to my stomach, Gil.
To the point where, like, afterwards you're like, well, you know, I have a newborn child. Like, you have to think about the things in life. It is really like a gambling psychology thing. I've said this before many times. It's like, if you lose a bet where you're actually losing money, it's almost like, okay, that you know that feeling. But when you lose out, right, you're only losing like a unit, right? It's not even like a big deal in terms of losing the money. When you miss the chance to win tons, as you would have with the 150-1 on Thigala.
Oh, yeah.
It's also a stock market feeling, right? It's like, oh, if I lose money in the stock market, that's one thing. But if I thought to buy a stock that ends up soaring, but I never bought it, that kills your mind. And that's the kind of thing, because you don't know when those opportunities are going to come up again, right?
Right. It's the FOMO, right? That's what the kids call it. But it's the perceived value. It's the unrealized gains that you missed out. And that's why every financial advisor will ask you, right? What do you want? What are you worried about more? Missing out on the potential gains or losing out, or losing on the losses, right? Like if you don't sell at the right moment. That's why there's cash outs, right, on certain books. But yeah, it was, you know, that's my second triple digit amiss on the season. Tom Hoagie was the other one at the American Express. And then he went on to win, Gil, the next week.
Of course
against
he
Jordan
did.
Spieth,
yes.
Right, against Jordan Spieth, who I had as well. So, but I digress. We're not talking about that. I know you won your 150 ticket that weekend. So it's a yin and a yang, right? So that's what
my
we got.
Yeah, my 100-1 on Ole Miss. That's right. Not quite 150-1, but yes, 100-1 on Ole Miss. I felt even worse about that. I was like, oh, I guess I shouldn't tell you. I just hit Ole Miss. Okay, so please, let's have the runner-up this week at the Open Championship. What do you like? First of all, what are you looking for, and who did you land on?
Right. The old course, right, par 72. It can measure anywhere from 73 to 7,500. It's probably going to average around 7,300, maybe a little bit less. But you take a look at who's won here, right? Experience at St. Andrews, experience is success in majors. Current form is definitely something that you want, right? Guys who have won here have won this season previously, about 8 of the last 10 or 9 of the last 10. So again, this is the last major. It's late in the season. You want someone who has current form coming into this. And a couple of guys jump off, especially at the top with their number. Scottie Scheffler at 18 to 1. I know we always talk about him in majors. It would be fantastic. We see a lot of Augusta links to St. Andrews, right, with the past winners. Scottie Scheffler at 18 and JT at 21, right? JT won the PGA Championship five tournaments ago. That's also something you got to take a look at, that he plays extremely well in these coastal type courses. So those two guys I'm looking at the top.
Okay. Head to heads. Is there someone you're picking on or you're looking to pick on?
Yeah. I mean, last time I tried to pick on someone, right, I think it was on this show, Gil.
Was it Matthew Fitzpatrick? Yeah.
And I had a Will Zalatoris ticket. So that was also beautiful, a beautiful mess.
You are something, man. Yeah.
I know. I don't know if it's good or bad, right? Any other second place is fantastic.
It's good. Yeah.
But a guy that I'm a little bit worried about right now, a guy that I'm targeting right in matchups is Justin Rose. Really like how he's playing. He didn't play well. Also, someone that I'm targeting that didn't play well last week is Hideki Matsuyama. Those two players, like, Xander is playing so well, I'm worried about fading Xander. And Rory is also playing extremely well. He sets up fantastic. If there's one golfer right now that a lot of people are on, and I'm worried about saying this because the last time it happened, this guy went on to win, is Cameron Smith. Look, he is fantastic, right? He is playing fantastic, and I would not be surprised, Gil, and I said this last time, if he goes out and he wins. At the same time, like, that driver can get a little inconsistent. I think it needs to be there. The short game is fantastic. And by all stretches, Cameron Smith could actually win this golf tournament. But from a head-to-head standpoint, wanting to potentially fade maybe a missed cut parlay with some other golfers, I think he can get you a high number. Again, it could be a top five or a win for Cameron Smith. But he's one player that, of all of these guys that I want to bet on and target, he was the one that was last off my list. Got really close, but can't bet them all.
Okay. Did you give us who you actually did bet outright yet? Have you given us those yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. So, of course, Tony Finau. Let's get that out of the way. That just should be a consistent number that we always, and then player that we always put on the board, on the card.
He's totally finishing second. He's totally finishing second. Yeah.
Actually, the most top 15s, you know, it's come from Tony Finau in the last 2 years, the last 4 or 5 years. At the Open Championship. So he's there. I also love Hideki Matsuyama. If you can get him I think they're still out there at 50 to 1. He's 50 plus 5,000 on DK Sportsbook. Tony Finau, you see right there. Max Homa, I got a feature on him at 80 to 1. I think he's rounding into form as someone who could win early in his Open experience. And a deep guy, look, you see Seamus Power there at 80, but in some books, he was sitting there at triple digits at 100 to 1. Seamus Power, if you take a look at what he's done at the major championships this season, has been fantastic. And at the Irish Open, he was T5 at the halfway point, just faltered a little bit on the weekend. But I think he's someone, if you want to play the derivatives, maybe not necessarily outright, I still am. Seamus Power is also someone I'm very, very interested in.
I didn't hear Tiger Woods' name in there. Not a word.
No, not. I mean, at 66 to 1. Look, I think fading Tiger Woods at St. Andrews is a fool's errand, but right now, with how he's playing, right, this is one tournament, too, that you don't have to worry about the weather so much, right? It might be a little chilly, but not so much. You don't have to worry about the hike around the course, right, because it's relatively flat. There's no real undulations like Augusta or even Southern Hills, for that matter. Again, to make the cut, I'm always going to say Tiger, especially at St. Andrews, but outright at 66, no. I mean, there's another guy, too, Padraig Harrington. You take a look at what he's done on the DP World Tour, a bunch of top 30s. He won the U.S. Senior Open. He played, I believe, last week and did fairly well, the Irish Open and played fairly well. And he's got really good experience here at Dunhill's, at the Alfred Dunhill Links. It's a different setup than the Open Championship, but I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Harrington, if you want to take a blast from the plat of the past. You know, a two-time winner of the Open Championship in back-to-back years. Harrington is also someone that I really like, maybe at a top 40 or top 20 market.
Did you take a flyer on first round leader? I know sometimes you do that.
Yeah. So Rory at 14 to 1, it's not really a flyer. I think Rory is just sets up so perfectly. He's such a fast starter. So I would not be surprised if we see Rory out there, at -6, -7 leading the way. But also Seamus. Seamus Power is at 80 to 1 or 75, I believe, around there in the DK Sportsbook. It might be a little bit less. right now to see where it lands out. But same thing, right? I want these guys to start off fast, and I like them to win. So give me Sheamus and Rory for first round leader.
I like it. Reed, appreciate it. Real quick, because we only have 30 seconds, but you're also the NFL and NFL analyst at DraftKings. What's your favorite single season long bet you have right now, NFL wise? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, I got Nick Chubb right now at plus 1,000 to be the leading rushing, the leading rusher, right, in terms of yards in the NFL. If it's Jacoby Brissett, give me Nick Chubb.
Makes very logical sense to me. We'll see. By the way, we'll see. When will the Deshaun Watson thing be ruled upon? Thing, by the way, I called it. Very technical term. Thank you, Reed. Appreciate it, man. Good seeing you.
All right, Gil.
At Not Reed, easy. You too. At Reed T. Fowler. That's R-E-I-D. On the Twitter machine. Mark Borchardt joins us to talk baseball on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.